Well, I want to bring back the reality of humanity here, and I really liked, was interested in your comment, Bob, about the issue of her kids.
Well, I think that as we approach patients in the clinic, especially those with metastatic breast cancer, their social milieu that they reside in is, I think, often overlooked. I'm reminded of that every time I go to a patient's funeral. And you're suddenly faced with the fact that what we do as medical oncologists is really compartmentalized to an examination room. And then you all of a sudden realize how that little compartmentalized process had a ripple effect that's much, much larger, I think, than most of us would ever appreciate. And that ripple effect is dramatic to the family, and especially children who look to their parent for security and comfort and assistance in becoming an adult. And then to be faced with losing that person is quite dramatic, and it's been demonstrated it has lifelong effects psychologically. And those effects are much more negative if they have lost a parent with unresolved issues or unexpectedly. So when I see a patient with small children or children, anyone under the age of about 20 or 22, I actually specifically ask them, how are your kids doing? How are you dealing with this with your kids? How are you approaching it? And so forth, to be sure that those avenues of communication and problem resolution are open.
What do patients say and what do they ask you? I mean, I guess a lot would be, what do I tell them?
They often do ask, what can I tell them? And how do I tell them? And there are some resources that are available to help do that. I will often involve the medical social workers who are really skilled at interacting with kids. And there also is a book called When a Parent is Ill. It's written by a nurse, and it goes through the process of dealing with different kids of different age groups and how they view the world, and gives some really practical, real-world ways of talking with children stratified by age.
John, what's your perception of this, and how does it enter into these decisions?
Mm-hmm. Well, just a few comments. When I entered my residency, one of the senior clinicians said, John, the half-life for a clinical oncologist is 9 years. He said, those who go to funerals, it's 5. So I was actually advised not to attend patients' funerals. I've disregarded that advice, and I'm still in it 3 half-lives later, so I guess I'm okay. But with regards to how we deal with these patient-related issues, I think one thing is falling through the cracks, and I'd like to bring that forward. The fact is, after these women inevitably die, there's no one looking after the husbands. And one of the more inventive colleagues that I have actually got a program together where they mailed out about a year after the women had died requests to the husbands to come in, have a chat session, and they promised to have a babysitter for the kids. And some of the nurses volunteered to look after the kids while the guys all got together and chatted. And the feedback from that was amazingly positive. And although it wasn't initially part of the plan, apparently the kids may have actually benefited from meeting other kids who were also, in a sense, semi-orphaned by the loss of their mothers. And it just strikes me that probably the most economically and socially important person in our whole society is a young mother. And the loss of that entity probably has bigger effects than actually losing a husband in many cases. And it just strikes me that somehow post hoc we're not doing anything. Now, when we're dealing with women with these new relapses and the issues they're facing, we've got basically a stat psychosocial oncology team that's available to us. And after these first horrendous meetings, and there's no good way to break the bad news. I mean, you can take the courses, you can make sure you're sitting and that they're at eye level and be as compassionate as you possibly can. But if you're being honest with them, they're going to get the message that this is incurable. And I think that word actually has to be used in that session, if not the first one, in the next one, because otherwise you're dealing with some sense of unreality. But balancing that with leaving some hope for these women is a huge difficulty. And I think hope is a big part of quality of life. You can't dash all hopes, but you can't pretend that this isn't an issue, because I've had colleagues who've been so afraid to use that lack of cure word or that the death word that patients have actually not bothered to make a will because they never realized they were palliative. So there's this fine balance to walk. Fortunately, we've got a team that's far better at it than I am to help out and pick up the pieces after these meetings.